Before we jump into this episode of the Propulsion Swimmer podcast, here's a quick word from this week's sponsor, Athlete Interactions.
Athlete Interactions is an athlete-founded, not-for-profit organisation that aims to decrease stigma and increase action around mental health in elite sport. As athletes, we know how to work hard, but we're not always great at asking for help. One study found that only 10% of athletes with known mental health conditions seek care from a mental health professional. Every athlete has mental health, and it is at least as important as physical health to both well-being and performance. We recently launched our Athlete Support Network, a peer support service for women and girls who are current or retired athletes. Think of us like an independent teammate. We're outside of your daily environment, but we're in your corner to listen to whatever you need to chat about. It could be illness, injury, balancing studies with sport and life, athlete identity, managing your mental health, retirement, or anything else. Usually, you will get to speak to us within a week once you fill out our form. We're run for athletes, by athletes, and the scheme is supported by a mental health professional. This week is Mental Health Awareness Week, but that's what we're about all year round. Find out more on our Instagram at Athlete Interactions or our website, athleteinteractions.com. Take care and enjoy the rest of the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of the Propulsion Swimming podcast this week as we take you through an incredibly important week for us here at Propulsion Swimming, Mental Health Awareness Week. Now, unfortunately, there's no Dan with me on this week's show as he's been called away for some last minute work commitments, but I am incredibly excited to be joined by a fantastic guest in Olympic bronze medalist from Beijing 2008 and also two times world silver medalist Cassie Patton. Cassie, thank you for joining me on what is, in my eyes personally, our most important episode that we put out every year. It's a topic that we've done. We've covered my own anxieties in swimming. We've done eating disorders before. So, really excited to have you on. How are you today on what is a Friday evening? A long work week for you?
No, I'm really good, thank you. So I kind of juggle work and being a mum. So normally in the daytime, it's just mum duties. And then when 5 o'clock rolls around, that's when I work or I do my coaching or I do my remote coaching. So, it has been quite a busy week, but it's good. It's fun.
So earlier this year, swimming in this country, especially kind of age group swimming, was in the news for kind of all the wrong reasons, thanks to powerful former swimmers opening up about the impact of getting weighed and coaches' comments having on their journey in the sport and beyond. And for Mental Health Awareness Week 2023 at Propulsion Swimming, we want to carry on these conversations and hope that they don't get left in the wayside and hopefully help coaches, swimmers and parents learn a little bit more. Now, during this time, Cassie, you were one of the swimmers who came out with an incredibly powerful podcast on the Honest Athletes podcast, essentially contextualizing and sharing all the information that you'd researched on the topic, from a personal stories to swimmers to sports scientists' advice to official governing bodies' policies. You did the lot. And today's podcast, for me, in no way is aiming to replicate the incredible episode that you, Hannah Miley, Lauren Quigley did. In fact, I would actually implore all of our listeners to the Propulsion Swimming podcast to go check that out after this show. But first of all, I'd like to start with, why was this topic so important for you, based on your own journey through swimming to becoming an Olympic medalist? How does it relate to you personally?
So how it all started was I was just browsing on my phone and I read the article from B.B. Lenderhugh. And it just brought up so much emotions. Number one, I was like, oh, this is still happening. Like, this happened to me. And I was reading it. It was so powerful to read somebody else saying the same things that happened, you know, to countless other swimmers. And from that, I just really felt like that it needed more. The article on its own was incredible. And I just wanted to get a little bit of a more rounded view on it. So that's what I kind of set out to do. Now, for me, I had so many different issues. You know, I'm physically big, strong female. You know, I had issues around that, around my size, my weight, around becoming an Olympic medalist. And I wasn't happy with the color of the medal I got. And there was things that happened around that, you know, and there was just lots of different elements that when I stop and I pause and I'm reflective, that I really feel that I didn't get the support that I needed. It was never really spoken about. It was kind of like, come on, next gala, next training session. finished off my career with what was a career-ending injury. So I kind of went through this roller coaster of emotions and things, and it kind of it took me 10 years to get back into a swimming pool. And even to this day, like, I still have a lot of negative emotions, and I know that that's all come from the kind of the mental health side of the career, which it's just fantastic that we're speaking about it and that there's awareness. But, you know, you said earlier, my medal was won in 2008. So yes, we've come a long way, but yes, we've still got a long way to go.
Absolutely. So let's contextualize the context of weighing swimmers. So what is the process for weighing an elite swimmer? Let's talk about elite swimmers, because we don't want to talk about age group weighing. Elite swimmers,
no.
What is that process, and what is the purpose of doing it?
So I think, like so many different parameters in sport, it is an area which can affect positively and negatively performance. So that's it kind of in a nutshell, really. You know, it's about the amount of drag that swimmers may have. It may be, when I was speaking to the performance director, he mentioned some, I never mention names, but I make a point of that because I feel like therefore it's fair for everyone. So very, very good swimmer who is quite muscly, he's very muscle dense, and their conversation was, well, actually weighing him because he maybe puts on too much muscle, and it's like, right, let's try and strip that back. So it's not always around fat and carrying excess weight. However, that has been what has been mentioned a lot in the press. But yeah, it's just a performance parameter that people use. Which, you know, I completely agree that it is important. I've never once said, let's ban all weighing of every athlete ever. I've never said that. But what I do feel is really important is that the swimmer has ownership of that. Mm. And the swimmer has a say in that. Now, I was never, categorically never asked, Cassie, are you okay to be weighed today? Because if I had, the majority of the time I would have been like, yeah, okay, let's weigh this. Let's do this together. Let's work together to make me a better swimmer. But it wasn't like that then. It was you are being weighed. You are having your skin folds done twice a day. We are completely monitoring everything you eat. And then it just seemed like, rather than being an element of performance, it was the whole, everything that I did was surrounded by this. And that's where there's that issue. And that's where that mental health element comes in. Now, I'm not saying that male swimmers aren't affected by this. They are. You know, there are male swimmers out there that have had eating disorders. But I do feel like it needs to be treated with care and respect for both, but especially for females. Because, you know, you look at any social media feed and it's this body perfect, this summer body, this, you know, there's all this pressure already without the pressure of performing well on a national, international stage.
Yeah, and swimming is kind of a massively naked sport inherently, just what we do. It can really come into play. What do you think is the difference then between you getting skin folded twice a day and someone asking you if it's okay? How much difference can that make to someone's mental health, having the ownership being on the swimmer?
I think it makes a massive amount of difference. For someone to feel helpless and to feel like they have no say in what is happening to their body. Let's face it, for those people who are listening to this and maybe think skin fold, what is that? So basically it's calipers that take various measurements around the body. It can hurt. It's not the nicest thing. It pinches. You know, they're basically testing how much fat you have under your skin. And it's, you know, it's not intimate areas, but it's on your, you know, it's on your waist, it's on your stomach, it's on the top of your thigh. And, you know, you feel very, if you don't want that to be done, you can feel, I'm going to use the word violated. Like, there was times where I felt like, I don't want this to be done. And for me, like, I have reached out to a sports scientist who did this to me. And I say did this to me, like, he was being told to do this by the coach. The coach wanted it done. It was part of the parameters. But the relationship with me and that sports scientist suffered because I felt like it was him that was doing, you know, he was the one who was weighing me, measuring me, telling me I was this, telling me that. And the poor guy was just doing his job. Do you know what I mean? So there had lots of kind of knock-on negative effects from that. Now, I know that when I, when I competed in Beijing, I felt that I was one of the biggest, as in largest skin fold of all the athletes. And yes, you know what? I probably was. However, for me, when I lost even more weight and was a lower skin fold than I was at the Olympics, because I was so dreadfully unhappy, because I was basically starving myself to get that number on the scale, I never performed as well as I did in Beijing again, ever.
So it's kind of proof that physiology isn't everything, essentially, when it comes to performance. Yeah.
No. I'm a real believer that a happy swimmer is a fast swimmer. You know, and these other things have to fit into that. They have to fit in around the mental well-being. If you're stood behind the block and you have doubt in yourself, you are not going to perform, heavier or lighter. Whereas if you get there and you are like, yeah, you know what, I'm ready and I've got no doubts, and you could be a kilo heavier, but you're going to race well because you don't have that, you don't have that little niggling voice in the back of your head.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of Olympians kind of have this mindset in the moment of the Olympics that they've sacrificed, or they need to sacrifice, everything to get to that moment. And it might be that sometimes when you're in that cycle of, I need to get to the Olympics, I need to get to an Olympic podium, you're a bit blind to the damage that your journey could be doing to your long-term mental health. So when you were at Beijing, I'm not saying that you were, but when you were at Beijing on that podium, was it something that you thought about, like how your mental health was affected to get to that point? Or was it something that you reflected on after leaving the sport?
So I think, like, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. When you've got a goal in mind, be it a nationals, internationals, Olympics, whatever it is, you do, and you can become quite limited. So, like, the rest of my life, basically, outside of swimming, had fallen apart. Like, I was in not a very good relationship. There was strain from that, but it kind of, like, all of that was outside of the parameter, because all I was looking for was that 10K, that 800 meters in Beijing. Now, when you finish and that's over, and it's 4 years to another Olympics, it's 2 years to another Worlds, you sit back and you're like, just hits you. It absolutely hits you. Now, I've read countless different athletes from multiple different sports talk about the post-Olympic blues. So this isn't just a swimming thing. This is this just happens to a lot of people. And I do feel like there wasn't the support there. It's like, when you've been on an amazing holiday and you come back to work on a Monday morning and you're like, oh God, this isn't very fun. But then times that by a lot, because maybe rather than the holiday being, I don't know, next year or 6 months time, it's 4 years at the absolute minimum, So it is a hard thing. And I no one ever asked me after the Olympics, like, are you all right? Are you okay with the medal you got? Are you okay with how you're feeling? How are you feeling about getting back into swimming? Like, for me, after Beijing, when I say went off the rails, it wasn't massive, but it was big for me. Like, I was going out a lot. I was drinking. I never really drink. Like, now I don't drink at all. Back then, I hardly ever drank. And I was, going out maybe on a Wednesday night and a Saturday night, which is unheard of, really. I put on quite a bit of weight. I was just really lost. And when I came back to swimming, the comment was, gosh, Chrissy, you've put on weight. And when they got on the scales, the comment I remember was, oh God, you've put on as much weight as a toddler. Like you're carrying a toddler around your middle.
It's not great.
It's not great. So rather than stopping and being like, you know what, Cassie doesn't seem herself. She's going out a bit more. She's put on a bit of weight. I remember getting to the poolside, putting on my hat and goggles and like freezing and like physically finding it incredibly hard to dive in. But there was never that, come on, just sit on poolside for a bit, let's have a chat, let's just see what's going on here.
So do you think that was needed to make that journey out of the Olympics better for your mental health, or do you think there was something that could have been done kind of during your journey to the Olympics?
I think during the journey as well, because when something is made out to be this incredibly huge thing, and let's face it, in sport, for the majority of sports, the Olympics is the biggest thing. You know, like football has the World Cup, rugby does, etc. But most of sports, Olympics is it. So everything you do in 4 years is centered around peaking at that exact day, and that exact month, in that time. You know, so everything you're doing. And I remember having nightmares for months, basically from when I qualified, having nightmares about being on the block and, you know, being at the Olympics and falling backwards off the block. Now, in my whole swimming career, that never, ever happened to me. Okay, I never fell off the block backwards, ever. But it was this reoccurring, really vivid, like, night terror that I was having, you know? And I remember it got so bad once that I went, my parents lived in Cornwall when I was in Manchester training, and I was back in Cornwall, and I got into bed with my dad, like a little kid, and I dad, and I was like crying my eyes. I was like, what's the matter? You know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. What's the matter? I was like, this is, and he was like, you know what? It just shows you care. You know, this is okay. It's okay to feel like that. He's like, you're probably never going to fall off the block backwards, Cass. You know, you just do your best. And after he kind of said that, I remember it did ease. And it was like just that one conversation of just do your best, just go out there and give it your all. That's all we can ask for. And it just suddenly felt like this massive pressure had lifted in that one sentence.
Yeah. Do you think this whole journey leading up to it, the way kind of you were treated in the pool, made it harder for you to speak to someone within the swimming sphere because of the way that you were treated in? It was a very regimented skinfold weighing routine. It lost the personal aspect of being a coach or a support network. It became very elitist.
Yeah, so for me, I think it's quite important that I kind of vocalise this. So for me, in my swimming career, the Olympics were a real turning point. So before the Olympics, yes, when I was a youth and an age group swimmer, I had had my skin folds done. I was one of those people that got written on the board and it was compared. But then in the club programme that I was at, up to the Olympics, I was having a really good time. Like, yes, I had my skin folds done, but it wasn't kind of, it was just a normal amount. Okay. And then after the Olympics, for me, that's when things changed. So I never performed as well as the Olympics again. And I truly believe that's because of I'm going to be really honest. I was really like, this medal up here behind me, it's taken me a lot of time to appreciate how special being an Olympic medalist is. But secondly, the club environment that I was at the time, a lot of things changed. And that's when this disproportionate amount of focus was made for being weighed. And there was a lot of issues within the club that wasn't picked up. And when I raised it, it was kind of, not that I was made out to be a liar, but it was kind of like, well, that's just what happens. That's, you know, just come on, you're going to lose your funding. Come on, like, just suck it up. Just get on with it. Just train hard. You're good at training hard. Just get back in the pool.
So it's that message again that kind of a happy swimmer, that when you were at the Olympics, you're the happiest, is the best performing swimmer.
Oh, yeah. I genuinely was my happiest 18 months, 2 years was from when I moved from my kind of real beginning club down in the Southwest to my Olympic club that I went to. Those 2 years before the Olympics, I had the best time I've ever had in a professional environment, you know, for me. Absolutely loved it. And that's part of the reasons why when I started out on this, I did want to speak to my coach and I did want to say, like, what happened, what changed, why, you know, from the fact, you know, 2 years before to the 2 years post were completely night and day different. And I also know that, you know, from having conversations with other people, that coaches are under a massive amount of pressure. Yeah. That they don't have the support. Yeah, we talk a lot about the athletes having support. And yes, they are the people that stand up and deliver, are under that scrutiny in terms of the media and everyone watching them. But actually, coaches are under vast amounts of pressure. Their job is on the line, you know, maybe not quite to the extent of a football manager, but still, like, you know, a coach is judged on their swimmer's last performance. So it does go both ways.
Yeah, I think I remember you saying kind of in your podcast with Hannah and Lauren that coaches have spoken to you and they said that actually the idea of looking at physiology now isn't a topic that they just don't want to touch, essentially for protecting mental health. But then they also didn't want to put their name to that statement, which to me is a little bit weird, because I think mental health should come ahead of everything, and that's the message that they're trying to spread there. That's the positive message rather than the negative one.
Yeah, I mean, so I made it my blanket policy that I didn't name names. There was lots of people that did, but you're absolutely right. In the people, there was a couple of coaches that when I spoke to them and we had various emails and then we had, you know, phone calls, and their practices that they were saying sounded absolutely fantastic. Mm. And I completely agree, but they were very adamant that they didn't want their name put out there. Now, there's a couple of things, I guess. This was probably straight off the back of Phoebe's article that came out, which was quite scathing. And to be honest, like, you know, that's what's happened to her. That's happened to, like, literally, I have a whole thing here of the people that have exactly the same, if not slightly different, examples of what's happened to them. So I understand that at the time, but I also still feel like good practice should always be changed and should always be, you know, shared, because that's how we change a culture. We don't change a culture by some people doing really good practice but then not actually not standing up and speaking about it and sharing it and saying, actually, do you know what, maybe have a think about this. Are you doing this? Are you doing something else? So, yeah, I guess at that time, I can understand it. But actually going forward, there needs to be a transparency on good practice.
When it comes to sharing stories, how important was it that people share the negative stories as well, the ones that sparked this whole conversation? Why is it important that those come out and people talk about their mental health and their journey? Why is that so impactful in the sport of swimming?
I think it's really important that people feel heard. When you've been in an environment where you feel like you have no voice or your voice isn't listened to, or when you do try and ask why, you're told, don't like this, find another club. Because that is something that a lot of swimmers and parents have been told, lots, myself included. I've had that told to me at one of my clubs that I was at. If you don't like how it's done here, find another club. So if you're in this environment where it's my way or no way, and you've never been heard, you've never been listened to, but it's happened to you, and it's impacted you, and it's still impacting you, to have someone be like, you know what, I will listen to you. I will try and voice this for you. And that's, and I'm not saying that I'm this angel that has done this for people, but I just felt like it was a really important thing to do, because there are people, I'm 36, and I still I'm impacted by what happened to me a decade, 15 years ago. And there are other swimmers who are still in, you know, some of them were in 40, 45, who are still being impacted, as well as the people that retired last year. So one of the things that I read, and when this was going around, it was tweeted, was, oh, this is historical. You know, what Cassie's saying is historical. What Phoebe's saying is historical. And I'm like, okay, so when does something become historical? When someone retires last week, or they're still currently swimming, but it happened 2 weeks ago, is that historical? Because it still goes on. So to give that voice to people and just to let them know that what happened to them wasn't right, and that we are trying to have a conversation to change, I feel that's really, really, you know, really beneficial to someone and to their mental health, and just for them to feel validated into what happened. Now, I have to say, like, I truly believe that Swim England are looking to change their policies and they're looking to do things, which is fantastic. Like, that's how things are going to get better, by questioning a culture, not just accepting it, and having that respectful, actually, you know what, why is this being done? Can you please just explain to me what it is that you're doing here? And if that person doesn't have an answer, rather than shutting them down and saying go find somewhere else, be like, actually, you know what, let's reflect on that. What can I do as a coach that's going to assist these group of young people You know, yes, our, you know, the oldest of our British swimmers, I would say most of them are still under 30. You know, I can't think of any swimmer in British swimming remit that's over 30. So they're still young adults.
Yeah,
early 20s is a young adult, you know. So, yeah, I think it's really important to have these conversations.
Yeah, for me, it's not necessarily about what happened that needs to be learned from, because I think swimming is getting past that point. I think those warning signs were already being picked up on. I think it's the bravery of these swimmers to sit up and say, and talking about their own experiences might make other swimmers sit up and stand up for themselves and speak to their coaches when their mental health is being impacted, even if it's not in a weigh-in culture, whether it's just they're burnt out, whether they're overcome with school stress, all of the different aspects that make up mental health. I think those who are brave enough to speak about it in the public eye, like yourself, like Phoebe, I think that enables the conversations to happen behind closed doors, which are the most important conversations.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And, you know, we a lot of what I guess I've spoken about in the beginning was about the weighing culture and about this kind of, you know, how that was treated, how people were spoken to. But actually, the more I got into this, it just became this whole bigger thing about the coach-swimmer dynamics and that power relationship and how a lot of the times, you know, it's an example of this would be when a swimmer does well and they walk down the poolside and all of the people congratulate the coach but basically ignore the swimmer. Now, that's happened to me when I qualified for the Olympics. I walked down, everyone was like, yeah, well done to my coach, didn't say anything to me. Now, I know that things are changing, but it needs to be, there needs to be this kind of real emphasis on celebrating swimmer, helping support the swimmer, and because that swimmer is really important, then supporting the coach to support the swimmer, you know, rather than kind of the coach being the really important thing because they're getting the medals, the coach is making those medals happen, you know. The coach is only getting those medals because the swimmer's doing the work that they're setting them to do. So it's a partnership, not a one over the other type thing, if I've vocalize that in a way that you can understand. But
no, I get it.
Yeah, I do think that, you know, it is really important. That's one of the things that I was trying to do. I wasn't out to point fingers at coaches and say you're doing this all wrong. I was just trying to, exactly like you say, start that conversation and let's keep that conversation going.
Yeah, are there any kind of advice from all of the research that you've done and the amount of people you've spoken to of kind of like good practice that coaches should have with just swimming communications with swimmers?
I feel like if you don't know how to, it's like if you were writing a session and you didn't know how to train a distance swimmer, you would hope that you would go and do a bit of research on the training load that you would need to do to make sure that that distance swimmer was peaking at the right time. And it's the same with mental health. If you've got someone or a squad of people and you're thinking, actually, you know what? I don't really know how to handle this. Mm. It's about either signposting and having clear signposts. It's like, okay, well, you obviously aren't yourself. I don't really feel equipped to help you, but these people can. Or getting a little bit of help yourself to be able to pick up the signs. And because, you know what? At the end of the day, coaches can't do everything. They, you know, nobody can do everything. So it's just about making sure that the coaches feel secure enough to be able to signpost if they're not feeling secure enough to help themselves. You know, we're not trained counsellors and, you know, a very few people on poolside are, but there are people that you can say, actually, have a speak to the welfare officer. Or maybe if there's, you know, the Swim England have got really good guidance that's coming out on mental health and wellbeing. Right, have a look through that. Here's this is what you can do. And you know, I always say, just asking that question, are you okay? And someone's like, yeah, I'm fine. But you can tell they're not, be like, no, really, are you okay? Is there anything I can help you with? You know, and it might not be that day. They might want to do that session. They might go home. They might come back the next day and actually like, yeah, you know what? I just need 5 minutes of your time. you know. And yeah, I just feel that that's something that we as a culture in general need to get better at, but especially, you know, as a sport. Yeah.
Yeah, especially a culture as a general, there's all the campaigns about just asking a friend if they're okay and stuff like that.
Yeah.
With all of this information that you gathered and a clear passion that you have for raising awareness, whether it's for people's journeys in the sport, their mental health, weighing, new policies, is there anything that you're looking to do to improve guidance or maybe kind of advise others who are going through the same journey that you've been through?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. So I've literally just got off a Zoom call with Athlete Interactions, which are a group of athletes who are looking to raise awareness of mental health.
Sponsoring this podcast as well.
Well, fantastic. Look at that. So that's one of the things, you know, I said to them, like, I'm not going to be able to do, I've got two small kids. I can't do it full time. But what I can do is I can help. I can listen in. I can join in. So making the connections there. And also on Thursday, fingers crossed for me. So I've got an interview with Swim England to become an independent member of their oversight committee. So I'm going for the athlete representative role. So that's on Thursday, that interview. But you know, when I spoke to Swim England, I asked them, I was like, what can I do? What can I do to help you? Because I am passionate about it. And one of the key things for me that came up very, very early on in this is that I got a direct message from a mum. And she's like, I've got two kids. They're 8 and 10 years old. They love swimming. But from reading these articles, I don't want to send them to my local swim. And I was like, no, send them. You know, and for me, it was, I've got two kids, 3 and 2 years old. And if they love swimming when they're that age, I don't want to have a moment where I ask that question of myself. And that's what, you know, that's what my aim is. Swimming is a fantastic sport. You know, I know it, you know it. The majority of you people watching and listening know it. So it's about making sure it is a fantastic sport, which doesn't do damage. And it just, you know, people can leave it and they can hang up their hat and goggles and they can still love it like they did in that first swimming lesson that they loved.
Absolutely. Now, kind of before we end this podcast, I think a really good place or a really good question to ask you after all of, it feels like negativity, but it's not. It's really important conversations that we have is, how are you? Like, how has the journey been now as a mum of two, out of swimming, looking back at it now? Do you look back fondly as a swammer?
Yes. So, yeah, I am. When I look back on it, I know that things that happened to me have shaped who I am. Now, I am a coach. I don't have a swimming squad, as it were, at the moment, but I do have a junior swim academy that I coach. And one of the things it's kind of always in the forefront of my mind is I want that little girl, that little boy, when they get out, to love swimming, you know, and to enjoy it and to champion them and champion what they're good at, to, you know, make them better. And I think part of that is me anyway, but also I do feel like a big part of that is driven by what's happened to me. I don't want a little swimmer to look at themselves in the mirror and be like, I'm really fat or I'm not good enough because of a comment that I said to them. Like, that's something I never, ever want. I'm going to be really like honest with you. It did take me 10 years to even contemplate getting in the water for something that wasn't work-related. I still am not complete. I don't swim for pleasure that much. Like I do a bit. So I know I'm not completely healed of everything, but I'm getting there. I, when I was kind of really deep in the research I was doing, it was really hard. It was really hard to kind of relive things, to hear other people's version of what happened to them. But actually, from the conversations I had a conversation with my coach that I wouldn't have had if this hadn't come up. You know,
is it almost a healing process?
Yeah, I feel like it was, especially the conversation I had with my coach, because you know, he assisted me in winning my Olympic medal. I've got some of my best memories that I've got in my life with him, with fellow swimmers in that swimming club. You know, but then I also have some of the hardest memories in that same environment. So yeah, it was healing. It was hard. I did actually get a bit poorly. I got pneumonia around the same time. So I don't know how much of that was just stress and being a bit run down. But I really hope that this conversation, like you said, this conversation continues. And it can only be a good thing. It's not a negative thing. It's a good thing to speak about it.
Yeah, 100%. And I hope people take away from this podcast that it's okay to talk about these topics, no matter what they are, with whoever is, or whoever you want or feel most comfortable to speak to.
Mm.
So, Cassie, we do usually finish these podcasts with some quick fire questions to get to know your swimming journey a little bit better and you away from the swimming pool.
Yeah.
So what was your favourite event when you were swimming?
So it was 200 fly. Yeah.
Lovely. Who was your swimming idol?
Oh, so when I was younger, I had a signed picture of James Hickman, 200 fly extraordinaire. Nice. On my wall.
Very good. What's your proudest moment in swimming?
So it's not actually winning my Olympic medal. It is when I've got two. Number one, when I won my first national medal, I'd got fourth three times in a row, and then I got a bronze, so that one. And also for me, making the Olympic final in the 800 metres freestyle, when a year before I was ranked 100th in the world. They're my two. Yeah.
Wow. What is the hardest set that you ever did in training?
So every Thursday night we would do 10 800s off 10 minutes, and then it would go 10 minutes, 9:45, 9:30, 9:15, 9 minutes, twice round, and then two max. And we would basically do that set every Thursday night. So, yeah. Had many of them. They were hard.
And final question gets to know you away from a swimming pool. If you were to go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You could take friends, family, celebrity. Who would you take with you?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've got my husband and my two kids, so that's three. But if I could leave them at home.
Take two road trips then. We'll do the family one and then a different one.
Yeah. Okay. My family one, just, you know, keep them happy. Oh, can they be dead, or can
that be? No, they can be dead. They can be dead.
So I love Doris Day. I've got a poster of her there. So Doris Day, I've always had a crush on Sean Bean, but can I bring him from his sharp days? So maybe not quite as old. Sharp days. And then my third one, maybe Henry VIII, just so I can get in there and like understand why.
Oh, interesting. Love it. Well, Cassie, thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I really appreciate you opening up and talking about what is a tough topic, and hopefully everyone can learn from the example that you're setting us, especially.
Thank you.
So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swim Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, and me and Dan will see you in 7 days.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.